Hello and welcome to another episode of Transformational Blueprints, where we try to put a dent in the large number of transformation programs that fail. Hosted by me, Mario Michaels, founder and director of Synaxia Group. On this series, we will bring you unique insights drawn from first-hand experience from some of the most high-profile architecture and transformation leaders across the globe. Topics told in order to share knowledge, experiences, and ideas to inspire, innovate, and give back to the architecture community. So grab a coffee, sit back, and relax. In this episode, we're joined by Tim York, and we're talking about AI and how businesses are at risk of sleepwalking into a dystopian nightmare, as Tim puts it. Tim's an ethical leader of people and technology and a passionate advocate for meaningful change in the corporate world and our personal lives. He has an extensive background in IT, business consulting, and in recent years has become a safeguarder and custodian for users and consumers. He knows information is the new religion, and you'll find him talking about this often. Tim's determined to bring balance between technological advancement and human health and well-being, and among other activities, he creates content online to help the cause. He recognises that change is often difficult, and he truly believes that a dynamic yet pragmatic approach that calls out all the obvious and really gets us thinking and talking so we can take more responsibility is central to meaningful change. Thanks very much for joining us, Tim. If you wouldn't mind, just give us a bit of an intro into yourself and your career to date, just so we've got a bit of context.
Yeah, thanks, Mario. Thanks for having me. So I've been in IT probably about 25 years. I've gone through various different areas of IT, my career, leadership, architecture, consulting. And so I've been around the block. I've worked in a lot of different sectors, a lot of different clients. But So I've got a lot of technology experience, but in more recent years, I've become a lot more interested in people and in the impact that technology has on people. So that's kind of a passion of mine, you know, which is still a little bit away from the day job. But yeah. So that's me. There's a lot of different areas of skill and experience, but we'll get into where my passions are.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, one thing that we are talking about today, which is artificial intelligence, and we'll come into why it's a passion of yours and so on in a few moments. But I suppose, you know, everybody's talking about it at the moment, right? It is the buzzword, and I'm trying my best not to sort of overemphasize that. But I suppose the big question I've got about AI is it's been around since, you know, arguably 1951. Why is it all of a sudden become a problem now?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I think we've had it in its, you know, in its infancy. Its impact has been and reach has been limited. But I think we're at like a crucial tipping point really in terms of the intelligence level equaling or surpassing humans. And I think that's why for many people it's, you know, either seen as an amazing thing or a terrifying thing, because you know, where you have raw intelligence that develops, you know, it's clear to me, at least in this area, that it develops without, you know, emotion. It's an emotionless thing. And where you don't have that in place, you know, there's it seems a lot more risky to me because it doesn't have that human quality to relate, you know, in the same way that we do. And I think that's where people start getting scared. So I think in terms of where it's gone from its initial, you know, use in very limited arenas to where it's so prolific now, I think that's why people are starting to get more itchy about it, because, you know, it has such great potential at this point to do a lot of good, but it also has risk to, you know, on the other side.
Okay. And I suppose, you know, just most of the listeners of this podcast will come from a technology or some form of digital background, but just to take it back a step, what is AI and how should businesses use it effectively?
So I guess the main thing at the moment with AI is that we are, you know, using it to make our lives easier in the business world. So we're making, you know, processes and automation a lot easier for us. You know, we add more automation to process and workflow, we reduce our workload and free ourselves up for other things. So all of that's great. You know, it's we're saving ourselves loads of time with repetitive tasks that we don't want to do. With machine learning, you know, there's a mind that's kind of an archive that's growing all the time to assimilate information, organize it, and then present it in useful structure that we can then analyze and further improve process. Now that's all very logical stuff, and that's all really good for, you know, helping us to save time and potentially save money. And I think that's really the main thrust and drive behind AI for most people.
Okay, that makes absolute sense. I suppose, you know, from if we look at it from a talent perspective, there's been an influx globally around AI talent. And, you know, I was speaking to a technology leader a couple of weeks ago, and he made a really valid point around, you know, don't focus on just the people who can help you build the AI, but, you know, there should be a massive focus on training the entire organization on how to use the tool. Would you agree with that?
For the entire organization, yeah. I mean, I think it doesn't matter who you are in a business, you know, there's going to be advantages to having a AI tooling. So, you know, why wouldn't you push that out and maximize its, you know, use, even if it's for, you know, someone that's like a factory worker who's going to see a limited impact to that, you know, in terms of operation machinery, all the way through to, you know, an exec who, you know, is going to have a lot more options for how to use that tooling. So I, you know, rationally that makes sense to do that, but I'm sure we'll get into other areas as to why that might also, you know, cause its own problems.
What that leads me really nicely on to what do you think the direction of travel is? You know, where is it taking us at the moment?
Yeah, so I see two pathways, really. I see one where we have this ultra logical approach, you know, and very left brain approach to AI, where we're so kind of almost hell bent on leveraging technology and simplifying processes and saving money, and you know, it's very kind of focused one way of doing it that leaves out for me a lot of other areas that we should be considering. So that's one direction of travel, and then there's another direction of travel, which is where we are looking at that, how it can improve process, save money, but we're also looking at the human impact and what it's actually doing to the end user and or the consumer, and how that can potentially be having a negative impact on people's lives, their, you know, day-to-day way of living, their behaviors, the way that they interact with the world, all of that stuff. And so we're kind of balancing the two and saying, okay, here's all the good, but here's all the, you know, here's all the cons, here's all the things we should be thinking about and how it can really be damaging. And so we take a more balanced approach. So we're using the left and right brain. So that's the two different directions of travel that I see at the moment.
Okay. And you sort of coined the phrase when we last spoke around, you know, businesses potentially, you know, sleepwalking into a dystopian nightmare, which is a great way to put it, I must say. But is it really that serious? And if so, clearly you do believe that. But why do you think that is the case?
Yeah, so for me, obviously, everyone views the world differently, right? And we've all got like our own kind of vantage point as to, you know, how the world works, what's good, what's bad, what's ugly. And for me personally, like I see so much on all those levels, you know, and in terms of like, you know, how the world is structured, you know, from the very top down, you know, who has most of the power, control, and the money, right? Because they're all linked. And then you have this pyramid going down, basically, to the people on the ground that have a very, you know, they're much more of a effect. So they have a very limited impact to actually make any kind of change. So, you know, when you see the world in that kind of pyramid structure, it then makes you look at, you know, all these different interactions between all these different interests and powers. And so it gives you, I don't know, perhaps a more holistic view of how things work. And when you're talking about AI, when it's, you know, you have the mindset of these of quite, you know, a select few really people at the top of this pyramid globally, what are they really thinking about? Are they thinking about how, you know, we can all go forward together and improve our lives across the board? Or are we thinking about how we can exert more power and control, you know? And so that for me is where I see most of the danger is with AI, because when you've got that kind of mindset, and I think in business a lot of time, most of the time, people in those senior positions really do, you know, they've made so many compromises along the way, you know, and to rationalize their behavior, that by the time you've got to that point of having that much power, your morals and ethics, most of it has gone out the window, or you've kind of, you know, gaslit yourself so much that you really believe that you're doing good when actually you're not. And that really is the crux point for me in all of this. So when we're looking at, you know, what are these people then doing with AI? What is their agenda with it? Most of it for me isn't actually about, you know, collective improvement. It's about benefiting the few, making more money, making things more efficient, you know, and so it goes on. I know that's quite a long-winded answer, but I'm just trying to cover some key points in there. So,
yeah, and, you know, there's an argument to suggest that, you know, generative AI will be as big as the birth of computers, the internet, the smartphone, and so on and so forth. And you've highlighted some of the risks around generative AI there. Do you think there's an argument to suggest that people are giving AI more credibility than it's due, or do you genuinely believe it could, you know, take over, I suppose, or it's extremely powerful?
Yeah, I think we're at the point where we're at a tipping point, I feel, where, you know, it is powerful. And I think that's played down, but, you know, by the masses, you know, by most people. I do think there is great risk, like I said at the beginning, that it is surpassing the capability of the human mind as it currently is, you know, in our own development, you know, I think collectively. So for me, it does pose a significant risk. And, you know, when we think about, you know, who are the key decision makers for what we do with it, like I said in the last little piece there, I think that's where a lot of the risk is, because the power and influence to make good decisions, you know, for us collectively, it's not with people like me and you, for the most part, I don't feel at the moment.
Yep. Okay. Fine. That makes sense. And so inevitably then, right, we've seen this in the market. We've seen the birth of the chief artificial intelligence officer job title. Businesses are recognizing that an AI strategy and a breakdown of this strategy is definitely needed across all businesses, right? What's the process of developing an AI strategy for anybody listening right now, where they're thinking, right, we need to get on this generative AI, or we need to start using artificial intelligence to automate processes, make it slicker, whatever it may be, whatever. What's the process of developing that strategy?
That's a big question. I'm not sure if I've got a full answer to that, but I mean, there are some key things in there for me. I would start by looking at what the current and future AI tooling and capability is, you know, where the technology is going. You know, analyzing the different areas of business I know this happens anyway right now, you know, to see where the potential gains are. I think there's a lot of work that goes into that in each area to say, okay, where can we see gains, but not nearly enough to say where can we see losses, where we see negative impact. So in terms of strategy, that needs to be thought about. And another key thing for me, like I said earlier, is about the impact. What is the impact that we are having on the end user or the consumer of our service or our product, you know, and with these changes that we make with AI, with these improvements, let's do a full assessment of the good, the bad, and the ugly, because ultimately that, you know, those are the people that are at effect of what we're doing, right? It's end users and consumers. Mm-hmm. So that they're kind of the key areas that I'm always thinking about when we look at where we look at how we leverage AI and where it's going, where it's headed.
And there's also an ethical perspective to it as well, right? That surely that has to be a massive consideration for any business implementing an AI strategy.
Totally agree. Yeah. But then I've got to be honest with you, Mario. Where are people in business really looking at the ethical impact? I think it's minimal. You know, there's a lot of lip service to that in terms of, you know, the where are our ethics and values? You know, how do we see the world? How do we value our people? What are our keywords that we're using in our mission statement to reflect what we're doing in terms of being ethical? Because I still believe most of it in most of these mission statements is lip service. Ultimately, I don't want to go off too much of a tangent here, but ultimately it's about, you know, the bottom line and about paying the shareholders. And when you've got, you know, a board or a senior team looking at this and weighing it up, I think we all know that we'll say all of this nice stuff about being ethical and having good values, but when it comes down to it, it's the bottom line that matters. And that's one of the things that really needs to change. I know it's a little bit off piece because we're talking about AI today, but that's one of the biggest problems I think we've got, because we all grow up in this, you know, in this pyramid business model, which has a lot of lip service about, you know, doing the right thing and being successful, but benefiting people as we go along, when ultimately most of the time it's about the bottom line and everything else kind of gets kicked to the side. So I didn't want to go too strongly on that one.
No, it's important. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Because ultimately at a macro level, you're right. The every business, certainly if it's a listed business, they need to do what's right. Well, they don't need to do what's right, but ultimate goal is to keep the shareholders happy, right? And ultimately, AI is a small part of that across the whole business strategy. But I suppose whilst touching on that, is there a way to, it's really easy for everybody to pay lip service. I think you mentioned there to AI. Yes, we're using AI to do this. We're using it. We're doing amazing things with AI just to get whatever publicity or to get buy-in or whatever it is. But isn't there a risk with that whereby then everybody's expectation is AI is going to change the way we do things? You know, there's an argument to suggest if we make it or try and make it a little bit boring for people, that it does the mundane stuff, but not everything. Surely that's a good way to do it. I don't know. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's how far do you go? You know, do we say, well, we want to leverage that for, you know, these really important key things that are going to save us a lot of time and money? That's a good call. It's quite boring, you know, but the broader stuff that can have a really big impact, we're not going to go near so much of that, you know, because there's a lot more risk to it, and we haven't fully, you know, walked the road yet, so we don't know the impact. True impact that these kind of changes would have over the long term to people, you know. So, you know, there's a much more balanced, considered approach. So I guess that's the difference you're talking about there, is, you know, are we just going, you know, gung-ho with AI, or are we taking a much more measured approach in what we want to actually achieve with it? Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff it can't do at this point, you know, end of 2023. What stuff that, you know, where you've been part of a business where you've tried to implement AI, but it just can't do. Give me an example of what some stuff that, you know, where AI wouldn't be the best route.
Yeah, so I think
I'm sure there's a lot, by the way, but just a couple of examples.
Yeah. So I think where, for example, in the communication side, so in the Microsoft platform, for example, where, you know, there's been a continual push for quite some time to bring more AI capability in, because it's going to, you know, streamline processes, make things easier for humans to create stuff, you know, and to deliver. But actually, in reality, I've seen where, you know, there are a lot of limitations to automation with, you know, Power Platform, for example. There was a big buzz with Power Platform a few years ago, but I think we're seeing now where there are a lot more limitations to, you know, what you can actually kick out effectively, you know, without a lot of human interaction. So that's just, you know, one example. But yeah, you know, I do agree with you. I think we have a long way to go, but you know, once again, my, you know, the key point I keep making is we, and I said this to you when we spoke last time, you know, we need to have a lot more conversation where we are considering what our checks and balances are for any changes that we want to make with AI, you know, so we're not just shouting about how great it is and what it's going to deliver, but also, you know, what the negative impact or the, you know, where it's, you know, what the drawbacks are and what the costs are to people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's really important that organizations understand, you know, because everyone's committing to it now. We've seen a lot of businesses committing to, you know, AI in inverted commas, let's put it. But I think it's really important for them to understand the maturity of AI before committing to it, right? Because if you don't, you could overpromise and underdeliver, you could expect more from the AI than it's absolutely capable of, and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think AI at the moment is, you know, you get a lot of buzz technology and buzz terminology that comes mm-hmm. along, you know, in business. Say, yeah, this is the next great thing. You know, we really got to push for it. And, you know, and I think one of the issues is there, once again, if it's a really good money spinner, you know, then you're going to have plenty of, you know, people out there who want to exploit that and think, well, I can really turn a penny on this, you know, very business mm-hmm. mind. How can I make money? How can I make money quickly? So I think there's definitely a buzz with AI, and probably for the last 10 years. But I think the buzz we really need, and I talk about this a little bit on my website, we need a buzz mm-hmm. for AI / HI. So we have this buzz mindset around leveraging AI and all that it can do alongside human intelligence. You know, how do we combine the two so that we get to like an apex where they're both working together really well? And I think that human intelligence piece really needs to come in, you know, so that we can offer something that's, like you mentioned earlier, it's taking us in a really good direction of travel. So yeah, I like that's my own little buzz term.
Okay. And we've spoken a bit about what most organizations are using AI for. I suppose, you know, linking to that AI HI piece, give us an example of where that's worked really, really well within your experience, because I think you're absolutely right. I can certainly give you one around recruitment, for example. So really, really simple one. LinkedIn, great platform for networking, and obviously it's becoming more and more recruitment focused. Everyone can see that. I put an advert out for a CTO, when was it, a few weeks back, hundreds and hundreds of applications. And when you put a job advert on LinkedIn, you specify what's really important to be successful in this job. So that might be, you know, SaaS experience, AI experience, how many years, and so on. And out of, I think it was over 300, I don't know the numbers exactly, but there was 9 key criteria. And out of the 300 applications, the ones with the most key criteria were the ones that weren't actually relevant. And actually, you know, the two people that got to final stage only got a 2 out of 9. Now, they haven't done anything other than write their LinkedIn profile. And this is a classic case of where AI doesn't necessarily work, and it needs that human intelligence of a recruiter to go through the profile and go, actually, yes, that's relevant, or that business implemented this a couple of years ago and I know it's quite relevant, and so on. But I suppose that's a recruitment example. What about, give me one in your world.
Yeah, interesting. I would actually like to use that example, if I may, just from my own experience of it too. Sure. But more from the other side, not from the recruitment side. This is one of the other issues that we get with technology, is where a human being gets reduced down to a number. They get reduced down to a code set, okay, whether it's on LinkedIn or wherever else, right? And it's spat into a machine and spat out again. And we are taking out the, you know, so much of the time, the human element, you know, to feel into, to make sense of, you know, to get a feel for, and to use not just the logical mind in our decision making and in our appraisal of things. And for mm-hmm. me, that's really where these kind of systems fall flat on their face. I mean, I'll give you actually a more specific example of that. when I, because of the way I am, you know, I come from the heart a lot of the time, you know, I try to balance the two out. But when I'm looking for, you know, potential opportunities, I'm, you know, I have to use both. And AI hates me for that. You know, it, when it looks at my profiles, it's like, I don't understand what this guy's saying. His keywords aren't matching up with my algorithm. You know, I can't make sense. So I don't get anywhere near, you know, tops of lists. And usually I wait for people to come to me. You know, usually I'll get headhunted. And, and so I've had to kind of get used to that over the years. So I then thought to myself, you know, a few years ago, I was like, well, where do I want to go with this? Do I want to conform to this AI machine in order to progress in life? Or am I going to actually be my own person and stick true to my values? And that's what I decided to do. But I can see the problem there. Yep. It's a massive problem. And I can see the other side of it too. It's the same for recruiters. It's like, I saw this on LinkedIn the other day. Some guy said, he was moaning saying, oh, you know, I've had 100 applications come in for a job. Only like 3 or 4 were actually really good. You know, the other, you know, 90 odds, no good at all. Like, what's going on? It's like, well, this is the downside of using these systems too much to try and find work as a candidate and also to try and find the right people as a recruiter. There's a real issue there with that. If you take too much of the human equation away, side of the equation away, I think you're you know, potentially creating more work and more difficulty. So that's actually probably the best example. Yeah, I can think of right now.
There's probably, okay, without sort of becoming overly governance, if that's a word, about this, but there's probably a framework on how to use AI and then also a framework in how to talk about AI to business leaders. So great example that you've given there. But, you know, if people are using AI because they're lazy, then, you know, it's probably going to be unsuccessful because you're going to end up cutting corners and you're right, you know, it's just not going to work. But if you're doing it to save time so you can focus on something else, or, you know, there probably just needs to be a bit of give and take with it. It's not a almost treated like a silver bullet. It's going to solve all our problems, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think it needs a... Yeah, I think whenever we're approaching something like this to use as a tool, you know, we really have to look at what's our rationale for using it, how much time and energy are we prepared to put into it, how much are we prepared to research with it, you know, so that we're really getting the most out of that, you know, little area of AI to deliver something for us. And I think you're right, most of the time, or a lot of the time, people aren't doing that. You know, we want an easy life. And this is one of the other issues we were going back to earlier, is, you know, for the consumer and the end user, there's this big, big focus on, you know, make things easier. Let's have an easy life, you know, by doing this, and this. Great, tick all those boxes. But, you know, as I think most parents will tell you, if you just keep gunning for an easy life with your kids instead of really taking care of things, you know, that sometimes are difficult and more challenging and take more work, you actually create more problems for yourself in the long run. I'm going off a bit on a tangent there, but that's just an example in life of where we have to do that if we want a better result.
But like everything, right? There's a risk of overdependence on anything in life, whether it's AI or whatever it may be. So I suppose just tread a little bit carefully there is probably the message. Don't overly depend on it. Do you, and I briefly touched on it earlier, but, you know, the role of the chief AI officer, the, you know, risk of being another C-suite, you know, the importance of it and so on. Do you think there's scope for them?
I'm not sure we're, from what I'm seeing, I'm not sure that we're quite there yet. Obviously, AI is that is incorporated into other senior positions. That's, you know, a piece of the pie for them. I don't feel like in most cases we need that, unless, you know, you're an AI focused business, you know, or a big chunk of your tech business is AI. Then yeah, I can see that, you know, it makes sense to have that role exclusively, but I think it's still small numbers at the moment.
And if you know, we did see a resurgence of the chief AI officer, where would you have it sat? So, you know, there's a couple of schools of thought here. Does it go to the CTO or the CIO? Does it sit alongside them, report directly to the board? Obviously, it's dependent on the business, the product, the, you know, proposition. I completely appreciate that, but, you know, could if it is sat alongside a CIO, is there an element of, treading on each other's toes or?
I think so. I think, we just look at CTOs and CIOs who are always treading on each other's toes. My experience of that certainly been the case. I'm sure it has for you. So, yeah, I think if it was alongside, yeah, there would be a lot of that. And, maturing the role, you have clear boundaries and areas of responsibility. I'm sure that wouldn't take too long to do. And so, and then you could do a white paper on it and fire it out to the universe so every people can follow it. But yeah, I think either alongside or maybe one under that level for yeah, possibly.
Your background very much around architecture, isn't it? How can, or part of your background is architecture, how can an architect help with managing that AI strategy then? Because if a business doesn't have a chief AI officer, but they need an AI strategy, obviously the CIO or the CTO, whoever's looking after the technology team, will help. But surely an architect can do a fantastic job at doing it.
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously, architects are gonna generally are gonna have a better understanding of the nuts and bolts, underpinning technologies and, technologies that easily integrate or don't. So, the voice from, junior and senior architects, I think is, has to be a strong one, whether you're going into a chief AI officer or to a CTO or CIO. Yeah, I think, for us, well, I say us, I do a lot of other things. But yeah, I think, there's a really important voice there. But I think it also, that question also ties in with what we're talking about earlier in terms of, senior architect, for example, what their passions are and what their awareness is of, how businesses work and interconnect with each other and how, the world works at kind of a higher level. If those people in those senior positions have got more of that awareness and wisdom, I guess, in a way, then that also helps to, influence the decision making at board level. So, I think the, understanding the AI tech and also understanding the, kind of impact analysis, in terms of humanity. I think if an architect or, someone in a senior position who's feeding into the decision, key decision makers can do both of those, that's where they're going to be really effective, because I know loads of architects who will just do the technical, but I really love the architects, and the CTOs, et cetera, who have a heart and soul, if you know what I mean. I'm not saying that people don't, but I mean they're
I
more
think,
empathic.
I think over the, and I've done architecture recruitment for, years and years now, and I've seen a cycle of the rise of SaaS businesses and technology businesses and businesses that weren't technology businesses calling themselves technology businesses. Look at, financial services, and every bank now is a fintech business apparently. But what that, from an architecture perspective, what that created was the rise of the software architect and the solution architect who's still hands-on. And we've seen over the past few years less what I call business architects, where they're not overly technical, i.e. they can't code, but they know what technology can do and what their skill is, being able to go and speak to customers, clients, understand the challenges that they're facing, and then come and put a business solution that may involve technology, may not, it may involve something else, it may involve a new process or whatever it may be. And I think we're starting to see that more now in the architecture world. So those humans, as you sort of alluded to, that go and find a problem and go and say, right, here's the technology. That may be AI, it may be, this, it may be data, we need a new data platform, whatever it may be. So we are starting to see that I did a post on LinkedIn, that the rise of the business architect, or the resurgence of the business architect. And that could be at enterprise level, that could be a sort of more in the detail, I suppose, but ultimately a business focus. And I think when we sort of spin it round, ultimately, when regardless of the AI strategy, it should be to do with what the business is trying to achieve, not implementing AI for implementing AI's sake and to pay lip service that we're doing this. And that's where the framework around, how to talk to the business leaders that probably don't understand as much comes into it, right?
Yeah, very much agree. And you've just reminded me there of I was talking about left brain earlier. Just to explain to people if you don't know, so in psychology and other related fields, you have this interpretation of the brain with two sides. So the left brain is logic, analytical, all about process and just logical thought process. Yeah, that's what the left brain does. It's just the thinking brain. And then you have the right brain, which is about creativity and feeling and intuition. And really what you're talking about there, I think we're both saying the same thing, is for those business architects from another, we can use other similar titles, they're using both brains to bring about change. And I think those roles, like you've said, are going to become increasingly important.
100%. And everyone's going to want to know the answer to this question, and it kind of does lead us quite nicely onto it, actually. Why won't AI take your job?
Okay, so for me, I hear a lot of people talking about how when AI takes away a job, it then replaces with another. So by adding ability to a business, instead of that resource doing it, so it's done by AI, it then creates opportunity and space for the human to do other tasks and new opportunity. So that's the rationale behind it. I'm not so sure in reality, that that's a cast iron, proven thing that happens, but I think that's what gets suggested, that it by simplifying processes and by, a resource being lost in one particular area of function, that it's then gained elsewhere. So that's the idea.
That makes absolute sense. So what we're effectively saying is some of the lower level mundane jobs could potentially be replaced by AI, absolutely. But we're always going to need that HI, human intelligence perspective, to for the higher level, the more strategic, the relationship driven roles. Makes absolute sense. I really enjoyed our chat today, Tim. Let's, if this is a word, synopsize. So, we've spoken about quite a lot. We've spoken about how we should be, there should be a framework for conversations. There should be a strategy for AI. We should be challenging conventions and conventional methods. And whilst businesses are there to make money, that is a bit of a dangerous thing from an AI perspective. We've really got to be careful that we don't over egg it and overuse it and over rely on artificial intelligence. And as you put it, that we don't sleepwalk into a dystopian nightmare. Is there anything else you'd like to add for businesses that are either thinking about approaching or putting together an AI strategy or even implementing AI without a strategy? Anything you'd sort of recommend at this stage?
Yeah, the top one for me is about checks and balances. Like, we have to be thinking about that all the time. And instead of just being gung-ho, like I said, where we take the time to look at what checks, balances and controls we want to have when we are looking at different capabilities that AI's got, rather than just thinking, here's the quick wins, here's what we can achieve over the short term. There's far too much of that in the business world, where it's like, let's go for the short-term wins rather than what's the long game. What's it going to look like in 5 or 10 years, and how are we planning for that in terms of culture, in terms of finance? What's our long-term model? I think we need a lot more of that, especially with AI. And the yeah we need like us like we were talking about earlier, we need that joined up thinking where we're, it's not just left brain, logical, tactical. It's also right brain, longer term feeling into impact, particularly, human impact. We need to leverage both. That's probably one of the things I bang on most about. I'm sure we'll talk about that lots more in the future. But yeah, I think, and also as well, there's another thing here about whenever we're considering any new functionality or capability, or we want to partner with a business or invest in something, follow the money trail. In life, we should always follow the money trail. Like, for wherever there are investments, wherever there are, vested interests, particularly for AI, we should be looking at that too, so that we can be sure that we are, investing wisely and well informed. And once again, I think there's far too little of that at the moment, and that's something that, you know, yeah, you'll hear me talking about a lot more, but that's my advice.
Little of what? I know we're finishing up, but that's a really interesting point you say that, because not many people avoid talking about money, and you know, and ultimately AI can save a lot of money. Absolutely, that is what it can do for businesses. But what do you mean by follow the money trail and work backwards from there? Elaborate a little bit on that.
Okay, so yeah, so I've done this for many years. So when I look at the, you know, we talked earlier about the different levels of, you know, how the world is connected, how business works, and where, how money flows, and in between who. You know, and so yes, for me, there isn't much analysis that's done to look at where our money actually goes. So when we buy a service or a product, or mm-hmm. when we invest in something and hand over some money for it, you know, like, where does that money actually end up? Where is its final destination? Mm-hmm. And because you'll find a lot of the time, there's a few select places ultimately where that money ends up. You know, unless you are, you know, going perhaps, you know, something that's alternative or a little bit left field in terms of how somebody does business or how mm-hmm. they invest, you know, that particular business in the middle invests, you know, that's where we start getting into more ethical and values-based investment, you know, okay. and procurement. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot more that we could talk about there, but I'm trying not to go too much into it. But basically, right. Yes, in general, our money and, you know, ends up in the same coffers ultimately.
Yeah.
And I think that's a much wider conversation. But mm-hmm. yes, I think for anybody that's feeling this kind of vibe that we're talking about, that kind of thinking is needed a lot more as well. It's like, where's my money actually going to end up in the end, mm-hmm. and do I want it there because what's being done with it?
Yeah. Great leaving thought. It's definitely a cliffhanger, isn't it? Well, look, Tim, thank you so much for your time, and more importantly, your insights. Hopefully the listeners will take something from this and be able to action some stuff around their AI strategy or how they're using AI for the better. From me and from Synaxia Group, thanks for your time, and thanks for being one of the first people on the podcast.
Thanks, Mario. Yeah, it's awesome. Been an absolute pleasure. Hopefully we can do some more again in the future.
I'm sure we will. We'll have to revisit it in a couple of years' time when we're all taken over by robots.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
All right. Cheers, Tim. All right, my friend.
And that's a wrap. Sadly, we're at the end of another Transformational Blueprints episode. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it and there were plenty of golden nuggets for you to take away. If you're a fan of the show, please do remember to share, like and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these too. Please also follow Synaxia Group on LinkedIn to keep up to date with new episodes. Links in the show notes. Join us next time for another episode packed with tips and advice from senior leaders in the technology world.